Hey folks, this is Dave. We're going to break kayfabe here and address reality for once. So the episode you're about to listen to, Stand By Me, we recorded this back in November. And we were about to release it the other day. And then we literally, I put the Instagram post up, you know, coming soon, Stand By Me. And then I think literally maybe like 2 or 3 hours or so after that, there was word that came out that Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle had been killed. So we kind of debated, like, do we even release this episode? What do we do? Would it be in poor taste? I don't, not that we talk bad about Rob Reiner or anything, but I don't know, like, it, weird timing, maybe, especially since, you know, given the subject matter in the movie. But we figured, you know, what better way to honor Rob Reiner than make a tribute to Rob Reiner than talk about one of his best movies, one of the movies that certainly a milestone for me in my childhood. I think I say in the episode, I've probably seen this movie dozens of times. That's not an exaggeration. Probably dozens and dozens of times as a kid. This was a real formidable movie for me, especially as a Stephen King fan. And a lot of credit of that is due to Reiner. I mean, he was a great director. We talk about it on the episode. He had a great run of movies, like a legendary run. And by all accounts, just a great guy, a warm presence, and a philanthropist, just an all-around good guy. And it's a real tragedy what happened. But we want to pay tribute to him with this episode. Spoiler alert, we all loved it. And again, spoiler alert, somehow Mike hadn't seen this episode. This was the first time for him. So actually, he was the lucky one. He got to experience this for the first time out of all of us. But yeah, just wanted to release this episode as a tribute to Rob Reiner. I mean, towering achievements in cinema. What else can you say? I mean, his movies are going to live on forever in our memories and the memories of those who have yet to see his movies. And like this movie and a lot of his other movies, just timeless stuff. They will live on forever, and so will he. So we just wanted to break kayfabe and kind of forego our usual kind of goofy Apocalypse Video style opening, just get real for a minute, given the tragedy of what happened. So here's our episode on Stand By Me. If you haven't seen Stand By Me, definitely check it out. It's a good movie, and I recommend checking out Rob Reiner's other work. He has an extensive filmography, a lot of good movies in there, and a lot of range. It's not all just, you know, coming of age dramas. He's got a little bit of everything. So definitely check it out. But enjoy our episode on Stand By Me. And rest in peace, Rob and Michelle Reiner.
In all our lives, there's a fall from innocence, a time after which we are never the same. It happened in the summer of 1959, a long time ago.
Oh, man, where do you hear this? Where do you hear this?
What is it, man?
You guys want to go see a dead body?
When the night has come and the land is dark.
We interrupt to bring you an update on the search for the missing 12-year-old Ray Brower.
Kid's gone. They're never going to find him.
Not where they're looking.
And the moon is the only light we'll see.
You think Mighty Mouse could beat up Superman?
Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real guy. No way a cartoon could beat up a real guy.
Go and stand by me. Oh, stand by me.
We're gonna be famous. We're gonna be on every radio and TV show in the country.
I still don't think we should go.
I can only have one food for the rest of my life. That's easy. Pass. Cherry flavored pass. No question about it.
I'd like to go someplace where nobody knows me.
We found him. We got dibs.
We better start running, Eyeball. They got dibs.
The four of us, Eyeball. You just make your move.
You're dead.
For some, it's the last real taste of innocence.
I'm never gonna get out of this town, am I, Gory? You can do anything you want, man.
and the first real taste of life.
This is really a good time.
It must be a blast.
But for everyone, it's the time that memories are made of.
So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand. Stand by me. Stand by me.
All right, guys, I just want you to know, before we start recording, I want to set you at ease here. I found the comb, so we're good to go. I retrieved the comb.
Hell yeah. You don't got any hair, Dave. Who cares?
I brought it for you guys. Well, mainly for Mike. Ryan and I both have no hair.
Still got a comb, though.
It's a beard comb.
I'm your host, Dave, and joining me on this reminiscence as we look back at our childhood lives and childhood movie favorite is fellow co-host Ryan.
Chopper sick balls.
No,
Chopper
he said,
sick balls.
He said sick'em boy, but what Ryan heard. We're also joined by Michael.
I never had any friends later on like the ones I had when I was 36. Jesus. Does anybody?
Pretty good.
Oh, Stand By Me. So let's just cut to the chase here. Mike, you haven't seen this movie till now.
I've seen it now, though, so can't talk shit. is this like another unofficial series and the pile of shame for me?
I think it's just if you were on this planet around this during in the last 30 or so, 35 years or so, it's kind of hard to miss. And that's
this
one,
is a
I
big
think.
This is a big movie. And it's arguable that this is the start of Rob Reiner's like historic run.
And it's one of the biggest runs ever, basically.
You could say it's Spinal Tap, but I was looking. He did do a movie. Between
was this
Spinal
before
Tap and
or
this.
After Princess Bride?
This is a year before.
And then two or three before Harry Met Sally, too. And then,
wow. Yeah.
And then Misery, and then A Few Good Men. And then an historic run of movies. And you could argue it starts with Spinal Tap, but he did do a movie in between this and Stand By Me with John Cusack, actually. I forget the name. But so maybe a speed bump. I don't know if that movie, it has like a decent rating, like average, but no one remembers that movie. I can't remember the title. I would say his run starts with this. With Stand By Me, and what a start to a historic run. Like, this is, Mike, a huge movie of the 80s.
I would say it's, I would call it not necessarily a pile of shame as far as, like, cinema. But maybe for, like,
well, the
men
pile
of
shame,
certain, men
I mean,
of a certain age.
In defense, like, yeah, or, yeah. Like, not in defense, but to explain the pile of shame. It's not like... Like
it's
seven...
not exclusive to Mike. It's just a writer concept.
Well, yeah, and the pile of shame was not like it's not necessarily like Seven Samurai. Maybe Seven Samurai be on it, but it's more like I remember we did Predator. Like I hadn't seen Predator. That was one. And I think we did Die Hard in the pile of shame series.
That was like a previous podcast.
Yeah. Right. This is a previous life.
I would
but...
put those over this though. That I think you know. But, I don't know. For me, this was a big one because, I mean, and I won't talk about, like, my thoughts in it rewatching it, but...
I figured out why I haven't seen it. It's
because kids they're bad? Bad
I
kids.
Think so. It's because they're... So it was rated R, so I wasn't going to see it as a kid. And then when I became an adult, I was like, well, I didn't realize it was rated R. I don't know. I just thought it was, like, a kid's movie. I thought it was, like, you know... I thought this was, like, The Sandlot. I thought this was, like... basically, you know, the same movie as The Sandlot.
It kind
or,
of is rip. Sandlot's kind of ripping off this, I think.
Or The Goonies. And this is definitely like a different tone than those two movies for sure.
Yeah.
Similar but different, you know? So it was like once I was an adult, I was like, it's not like I was like too good for Stand By Me, but it just wasn't anything that I thought about. And I actually still to the point where watching this, I knew so little about this movie. All I knew is it's based on Stephen King and they go to look at a dead body. I was like, whoa, when like F-bombs were being dropped and like, you know, stuff was getting
both kinds.
Serious. I was expecting that. That was an 80s movie. But the, yeah, no, it just wasn't. was not what I expected. It was different than I expected, and I understand now maybe why more people like this movie. Like I'll say The Goonies, Sandlot, and this movies, which maybe no one would ever group together, but I am because of my misunderstanding of what this movie was. This is so much better than The Sandlot or The Goonies, I'll say. Like, yeah, as being an adult, seeing the three of these, like, this movie's good. Like, I think this is, like, a really good movie.
You can argue all three movies are about the same thing, but just they go about the story in way different ways.
That's fair. And I didn't hate The Goonies or The Sandlot or anything. Like, I those were very charming movies. But this one, I definitely prefer of the three, and it has a different tone. So maybe it's not even fair to group them together, but
it's three movies essentially about the same thing, coming of age, but just they go about telling the story in much different ways. Sandlot is more whimsical and fantastical. Goonies is like the goofy adventure, and Stand By Me is like the more introspective, serious musing on growing up.
But it's also it is also like it's like little kids going on like an odyssey, like the Odysseus story or something, or like I was thinking of, like, man, people always complain Lord of the Rings is just a lot of walking. Like, well, have they seen Stand By Me? Because oh my god, that is this movie.
But to speak to the walking, like, to get right into the story of Stand By Me, it's about these four. Well, it begins in a great framing device. We begin with the writer, as he's credited, played by Richard Dreyfuss, and he's in his car. Wait, I love this opening shot.
You got a Dreyfuss, don't you? Can you do a Dreyfuss? You could do a Dreyfuss, can't you?
I was 39 years old when I decided to narrate Stand By Me's opening. That's terrible.
I feel like that's a mixture of guys. Like you.
I don't have a Dreyfuss. Why'd you think I have a Dreyfuss?
I think you kind of already just do. I think your vibe a little bit, like,
really?
Your voice.
Really? Well, hopefully it's not older era Dreyfuss.
No. Like, I just listening to you, Dave, a little bit, I'm like, oh, it's kind of, I got a Richard Dreyfuss vibe, you know.
Well, so the movie Tiger Shark Dreyfuss, he's in his Jeep, and I love the opening to this movie. It's such a clean, simple opening. There's no dialogue at first. It's just him in his Jeep, like, out on a road, and he's just sitting there, like, contemplating, and he looks down at the newspaper, and it says that his friend Chris Chambers was killed, like, he's stabbed.
Well, but you don't know it's his friend. All you see in the news, all you see in the news is, like, attorney stabbed to death or something like that. And
well, it shows the name, Chris Chambers.
Oh, does it?
It does. But,
you don't have any, context of who that is.
And even when we did introduce Chris, I didn't put two and two together until the end.
Oh, you kind of forgot about it.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if I was a Cody pervert and really knew names well, but, like, I see Chris Chambers, like, I didn't register, I just registered, you know,
no,
so
I'm,
much stuff
I was the
happening.
Same way.
I just registered, like, attorney stabbed or whatever. And then at the end when they're like, he became, you know, when they're doing the American Graffiti ending, basically, is when I was like, I mean, literally, it's when the movie said he was stabbed is when I was like, oh, he was stabbed, that was that guy.
Yeah. Which was a changed ending.
Really?
The ending of this movie was changed from the book, yeah.
What was the original one in the book? How did it end in the book? Since it was Stephen King, was there, like, did a giant spider show up somewhere out of the dead body eat them all or something?
No. So to finish the synopsis first, so he's in his car and he's basically reminiscing about his past and his friendship with these people that he used to know when he was 12, but he has since, you know, grown apart from. And the movie is about just kind of growing up and these four kids in Oregon. Was it Oregon, right?
Yeah, that wasn't part of the tour. That was a different part of the country. The state. We could have went to that because they have those signs, the film Oregon Film Trail signs out there.
Yeah, and I see, like, the towns where they film do, like, Stand By Me days and stuff. It's all small town Oregon. It looks like Oregon as hell. Like,
well,
it's
all the
very
radio stations are Portland. They're like, Portland, 95 movie, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the movie's pretty simple. It's about he's reminiscing on this summer in the late 50s where he and his friends, his name is Gordy, by the way, he's reminiscing about how his four friends took this odyssey, as Mike described it, into the woods to find the body of Ray Brower, this kid who got run over by a train. And they basically just have this coming of age adventure where they learn some things about themselves. They go through some trials and tribulations,
bad dads.
An odyssey, by the way. Bad dads, dealing with bad dads and shitty childhood. And it ultimately culminates with them kind of, you know.
It's a Stephen King story. You know?
It's a Stephen King story. So they face off against some greasers. You know, some.
I mean, I thought, by the way, I thought that this was going to be like, because, yeah, they're going to find the body of this dead kid who's presumably killed by a train. And I think the idea is like, we'll collect reward. We'll be famous or something because it's a missing body. The way that this was going on and the way this was played with the greasers, I thought there was going to be some like revelation that like one of these greasers killed the kid. Like I really thought that's where we were going with this. Is there anything like that in the book? Is that
no, not at all. No,
it kind of well, they has
have the,
that
they have
vibe,
the same though. They have the same ends. Like they want like Ace is like, oh, we'll increase our status basically by finding this kid.
That seems like a Ace weird thing for these greasers Sutherland. To care about, though. Like, that seems weird to me that they would be like, we want to be known as local heroes who found the body. Like, I feel like these...
Well, he's probably looking for a reward or something, I would imagine.
I kind of... Am I wrong thinking that, like, the greasers have something to do with the kid getting hit by the train? Even though if they didn't, like, maybe do it, but, like...
No, it wasn't over. If it was, it wasn't overt. There was never anything, like, overt about that.
I've always, in my head, thought, like, they don't want the body found because
that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Like maybe they chased the kid out there and he got hit. Like it was not like necessarily.
No. They explicitly stated in the movie, two of the kids stole a car. They boosted a car and they happened upon the body and they can't reveal. They're conflicted. They can't reveal the body because they stole a car and it's a small town. Everyone knows these two kids don't have a car and they would want to know how they got that far out there.
I think because this is a movie I've seen like 100 times just in pieces on TV, you know, kind of thing. I've watched it
a lot back in the day.
It was on TV a lot. And so like I would catch, I mean, I've seen it now. I've seen it in full a few times too, but like it was a thing of like it kind of works that way a little bit. Like that's kind of what I pieced together, like missing out. Like what's the deal with these greasers? Like, oh, they must have something to do with these, you know, this thing. But you need a little bit of some bad eggs kind of. Some bad guys.
And they are bad. I will say Kiefer Sutherland, the leader, Ace, of this group, scared the shit out of me.
He is scary. He's a scary fucking guy.
I wanted an American Graffiti style of like, where is he now? Like he's probably he went on to become the president of the United States.
Well,
I could
probably.
Tell you. In fact, and this revelation I didn't discover this until much later, like in high school when I was reading like all of Stephen King's books. He comes back in Needful Things as a villain.
What's Needful Things?
Needful Things is a Stephen King book. It's set in Castle Rock. It's kind of like, you know, cinematic universe of Stephen King's. And Needful Things is kind of like
isn't Castle Rock like Maine?
I think it's...
So did he like, Oregon. He went from Oregon?
I think it changed maybe in the book, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe just wherever he needs it to be, maybe, you know?
So this character, we see him later in life and he's a villain?
He's a villain in Needful Things, which is kind of a Monkey's Paw type of story. Like a mysterious guy opens up a shop in town, an antique shop. And it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, you know, people go into the store and there's like these mystical objects that like, you know, the people buy. And it's kind of like a Monkey's Paw sort of.
Sure. It's like you get your wish, but at what cost or whatever?
If I recall. Yeah. And
what does he do? What is Kiefer Sutherland up to at this point?
If I remember correctly, he kind of becomes like an enforcer character in that book, like carrying out like the bad deeds of the main villain who's
I think Kiefer Sutherland's character would either commit a crime and be in jail like in and out of the correctional system most of his life, or he'd become a cop. I think it's one of those two things.
I don't remember, but I do remember that some of the changes in the front, so in the end of the book. And you could say they didn't do this in the movie probably due to budget, but at the end of the book, there was supposed to be like a big storm happening as they find the body at the end. It was kind of a big thing. Also in the book, and this is one of the big things that the movie changes from the book, the movie focuses much more on Gordy. Gordy is, Will Wheaton's character is pretty much the main focus of the movie, whereas in the book, it's kind of more spread out amongst the four characters. And also, probably the biggest change in my opinion, in the book, it's Chris is the one who grabs the gun and like scares like the gang away. It's not Gordy, which is fine for the book. The book has its own thing that it's kind of doing. But like, I really think that and apparently Stephen King agrees that Reiner changing the focus of the story to Gordy really focuses the movie, I think, in my opinion.
It also he's more of like a plain isn't the right word, but just sort of like kind of like a more grounded character for like an audience member to grasp onto, or like kind of like or someone that sort of doesn't have much going, is more of like the straight man, I guess you can say a little bit.
Yeah, he's not crazy. Like,
there's also a twist that he has the gun, not Chris, you know.
Yeah, it's like he's not crazy like Corey Feldman's character Teddy. He's not strong like Chris is. Chris is a leader, and he's not goofy like Vern is.
He's not comic relief like Vern.
Yeah,
but I think that the thing is that he realized at the end there he is the leader of the gang, kind of. Mm-hmm. I think like he kind of like is now like we're not taking him, we're not doing this. Like I think he is. Like he talks about that Chris is the leader, but I think at that point he's
I think there's like if this is coming of age, right? Like maybe Chris is the leader when they were kids, but now that they're becoming adults, Gordy is going to be more the leader of adults. Because even with the way that like Chris ends up like going to college and taking the route of like kind of following Gordy, leaving Teddy and Vern behind later in life, like there's.
Well, there's so many things like watching this movie. So this is a movie I saw I've probably seen this movie like 20 times or more. This is a movie I watched a lot as a kid. As Ryan said, it was on TV all the time. And watching it now, it's been a little bit since I last watched it. Like this movie really nails childhood, I think. Certainly like as a snapshot in the 50s, but there are some like timeless parts of childhood that I think this captures.
I was so surprised about it. I think it is more timely than it is like, say like American Graffiti is and stuff.
Well, like there's one thing it really touches on that they hammer home at the end.
Do you mean like more set in the 50s, like specifically?
Well, no.
50s
I mean like it like more relatable to like any age.
Oh, yeah.
Like the big one being like the last line where he's like, I never had any further friends like I had when I was 12. Does anybody? Like that's one of the things I really like about the movie that's true to life is that how in your lifetime you'll have friends that seem so important in the moment, but then sometimes they can just drift away and you never talk to them for like decades. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like Vern and Teddy, like I like those. They're like, and we really didn't keep up after that. Like,
two more faces in the halls. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think about it. They probably had I'm guessing like 4 years where they were like really good friends.
As a kid, those like 4 years is forever.
Right. Yeah. It's a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what this movie really nails. And also just like also being a kid, like one thing that really struck me this time, you mentioned the idea of like walking and this is an adventure, an odyssey. They literally say to Ace when they pull up, it's like, no way, guys, he's ours. Like you drove. That's not fair. Like we went on the trek, the adventure. You did.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like it's 20 miles, so there's probably like a half hour drive or something.
I know. But for them it was like 2 days. But it's like, but that is a kid thing. I remember, I don't know if you guys ever did something similar. So I lived in Arizona growing up, and there's a Superstition Mountain. I lived in the valley. You can see the mountain from my house. And it was just like, I remember one day on a summer day by myself thinking, much like these kids, like, I'm going to have an adventure. I'm going to grab my backpack. I'm going to put a bunch of stuff in my backpack, and I'm going to hike. I'm going to go to the mountains. And mind you, the mountains from my house, Superstition Mountains, probably like 10, 15 miles.
And this was in the summer?
In the summer. And I literally grabbed my backpack, and I remember packing, I think I packed some like Slim Jims or something, a water, and toys.
Toys!
And I remember walking to the neighborhood. I probably only walked like maybe a mile at most. I remember walking past a house in another part of my neighborhood.
Where were your parents?
At work. I remember a kid opening up like her second bedroom window and like, hey Dave, where are you going? And I swear to God, and I'm just like, oh I'm hiking to the mountains.
Oh
and
my
I think
god
she probably was like, what?
I'm hiking to the mountains.
And then I remember, I don't remember exactly what I told her, but I basically just like, yeah, I'm going to the mountains. I had my backpack on me. And I should
preface, to the mountains.
I should preface this by saying this, all of this was just an adventure in my mind. It's not like I wasn't fleeing.
No plan.
How old were you? Like 25, 26?
You know, they say like movies, you know, don't, you know, they influence the kids, to take guns to school.
For all
stuff,
I know, I had watched this movie before this movie. Who knows? Yeah. But this was not motivated by like, I have a bad dad who wishes that I died instead of my brother. Like, there's none of that going on. It's just like, I'm going to go on an adventure. And I remember getting, I probably got maybe like 3/4 of a mile before I was like, oh shit, this is gonna take forever. I'm going home.
Oh man,
you didn't want to go up there and like, you know, play with your Batman animated series kit figures or something.
But that's what this movie nails. Just the idea of kids like going on an adventure, walking, and not having the forethought to be like, for example, oh, who brought the food?
Well, yeah. I mean, you talked about like why the greasers are interested in this. It's sort of like these people have nothing else going on.
It's the 50s. Yes, that was another note I had. Yeah, it's the 50s. Hey, you want to see a
town.
Dead body?
It's like they say it's a small town of like 1,200 people.
Like, so literally, yeah. their game is, you know, hitting the mailboxes, and they're actually like keeping score or something. Like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, they're like,
there's nothing else going on. So.
Yeah. They've actually developed a rule set around this breaking mailbox thing.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain.
About this time, Charlie and Billy were playing mailbox baseball with Ace and Eyeball.
Oh, shit, I'm out. God damn it. Shouldn't have gone for a wooden one.
Why don't you tell me something I don't know, asshole?
Billy, you're up.
Nah, you guys win. I don't want to play no more.
Hey, you can't quit. We only played 3 innings. That would be a non-official game.
Well, can we? Okay, so you touched. Can we talk? That's another thing about this movie. So there's some timeless things about this movie, you know, growing up. There's also some time capsule moments about 50s life. This is it. Mailbox baseball. They mentioned in the movie, like, it's only the third inning. So they've been doing that. They wanted to do this for what would equate to 9 innings.
I'm wondering if that's just a joke. Maybe that's just like, I don't know, just some sort of like.
Joke.
We're still got like the rest of the highway to go, you know, or something.
That,
like,
is crazy.
I don't know.
I do as far as the 50s of it. One thing
a
I
terrible
didn't
terrible time.
One thing I didn't like about this movie was the constant, hey, it's the 50s with the music stings. Like there was like a barrage of 50s music. Like, I swear, like every time it cut to a new scene, there would be like, remember, it's the 50s with
but that's just the time. They
yeah, that's to listen
radio.
To on
the
radio.
Was a
but
huge
deal. It's too much. I feel like it's like every time they cut to a scene, whether or not people are listening to the radio, you're hearing like the radio.
It's usually all diegetic.
It's not. I swear to God, it's not. Like it is sometimes, but there's so many. It's like it needed to dial it back for me. Like it was like. You can't play a new song every time you cut to a new scene. Like it's too much. It was too much.
I don't
know.
They all rock.
I don't know what to tell you. Radio was a huge thing in the 50s.
That's kind of what they're getting across. Even the radio guy is part of the pie eating contest.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
All part of the.
It was a big deal. This is the 50s, Mike. This is the birth of rock and roll.
You can do that when they're listening to the radio, which is a lot of it. I mean, it's a lot. They do it a lot, but like. I'll give you a lot, but it's too much. It's too much.
There's probably three or four times. Like, they literally, it's like, hey, like when they're at the campfire, he's like, hey, let's see if we can get any tunes.
That's fine. Like, that's fine. No problem with that.
Radio was huge, and rock and roll was huge. But I did have a thought, though. Again, this is just, you know, they can't. I just had the thought of Ace and his gang terrorizing like young kids while Lollipop is playing on the radio.
That was one when they were playing Lollipop, they weren't listening to the radio. Like the older kids were, but it cuts to the kids, and they're like, it's playing Lollipop, but they're like walking down. There is no radio going on. Yeah.
Well, no, they're listening to it. Vern and Teddy literally are singing the song.
They're singing it, but they're like, they're just singing the song. They're not listening to it.
Yeah, but they have a little radio, you know.
They have a radio.
Listening at the it's same not time. Playing, though. Like, they sing the song, and you hear the soundtrack or whatever, but then the soundtrack ends, and they're walking, and they're clearly not listening.
They have a radio on their person. They're singing a song that we're not hearing in the movie. It's timed.
It's not. That's what I'm saying. It's weird, because they're clearly not listening to it in the movie.
They
but
clearly
the,
are.
They
listening
are listening
to it.
To it.
You're crazy. Go back and watch the tape. You need to see it with fresh eyes like me,
no,
Dave.
Teddy has the radio. It's
and they're not playing it at that point.
Yes, they are. Chris and Gordy are having the conversation, and the music dies down because Teddy and Vern are ahead of them. The radio is playing ahead of them, so the sound dies down because they're further away from the radio.
It Yeah, I mean it is a transition between like this is both happening.
Ace and his gang are listening to the radio, and also they are listening to the radio.
I don't. There's no radio in sight there. And when the sound that we're hearing is so clearly
on the thing.
You didn't see the big the boombox on his shoulder. You know, and he's holding it like the 80s.
No, he has it like near his belt. It's like on a rope thing, like he tied. It's there.
All right.
Run the tape.
I don't know. Run the tape. I'm right.
I can't believe this is the thing in the movie. It was diegetic. There wasn't diegetic music.
It was just too much. It was too much of this shit. Like, I swear to God, whether or not this scene, it really is like every scene. Like, every time it cuts to a new moment, there's like a new 50s song. Just like, hey, in case you forgot, it's the freaking 50s here. It was too much.
I think it's part of it.
I think it sets the time, but I can understand being wary of like an excessive amount of needle drops. I feel like we live in a time and age where needle drops are just constant in movies, and it does get irritating. So I can see where you're coming from, especially if you don't necessarily care for the music being played.
I googled it. Like, I don't know how trustworthy this is, but there are apparently approximately 16. Times where it cuts to like a needle drop, which is too much.
Okay. All right. When you say the number 16, maybe
I don't
that
think
is
it's
too
that
much.
Many. I think that's just like stuff like that's probably including like just kind of background things and stuff. And like, I don't know. Like it's a long movie too, you know? I mean, not long.
It's
but
not
it's,
a long movie. Well, it's an hour
I know
and
what
half.
I'm saying. Like an hour and a half is a long time to fill for 16 songs. Doesn't seem
that's
that bad.
That's something that's shocking about this movie that I forgot because you don't think of it when you're watching the movie. This movie is an hour and 28 minutes with credits. That's shockingly short, but like, I think the movie does a good job despite its short length but perception of this movie watching it isn't that it's short, like, because you feel the length of their journey in a short runtime. I feel like when they come back into town, that line where he's like, we came back into town, we'd only been gone for 2 days, but the town seemed a lot smaller. Like they've been on an odyssey. Like I feel the passage of time in this movie, even though the runtime is short.
Well, they all kind of like
and they all grow.
The real thing is like, this journey was never about seeing the dead body. It was about the therapy that they all had along the way, you know, like all the conversations they had with each other and like talking out their feelings is I think the real growth.
Can we talk about the kid acting in this movie?
It's really good.
Really good.
It's like some of the best kid acting I can think of, like off the top of my head, you know. Like
this has got to like I imagine Rob Reiner just like, this movie is going to make me so he's probably like the kids like, we're going to be rich and famous. These kids are so good. This movie's going to make so much money, and I'm going to go on a historic run of movies. But I mean, just it seems like lightning in a bottle. Like, what's his name? River Phoenix, Will Wheaton, Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell. Like, apparently they all hung out together on set to try to build that camaraderie. And like, you hear like, you know, Corey Feldman had a really bad home life, you know, bad relationship with his parents. And apparently he brought that kind of to his character in this story. And his character in this story is crazy.
He's fucked
up. Like, Jerry O'Connell ever like grow up to be anything? Like, was he ever in stuff?
Yeah, he was as an adult, he was in stuff. He was in Kangaroo Jack. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
he hosts like a daytime TV show now, but yeah, he got really famous.
His big thing was Joe's Apartment. He's the first MTV movie. He's the lead in that.
Oh, yeah, that was him.
Huh. And but he was in stuff, but he never really like popped as like a huge
guy. He was in Scream 2.
Yeah. He's kind of like
very successful. Mike, that's
I remember I'm trying to think of other things he's in, but he talks about like recently of just like, you know, what taking like, yeah, like that talk show or whatever it is or game show job because he's just like, look, like I wasn't getting work anymore, you know. So but he's a handsome guy. He talks a story about he went to like NYU film school and stuff, and then like they're talking about this movie in class and no one believes that he's in the movie. You know, like,
oh, wow. Because he's so handsome.
He got into like crazy shape or something.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
And that was another thing to mention about this movie. He's referred to as the fat kid. And I'm just like, wow, that is what a fat kid was back then. A quote unquote fat kid.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
Yeah, I think I was kind of thinking about the actors, too, this time around. And River, it's all he's all eyes, River Phoenix. And you can like, you know, yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, he almost, I think, would have, if he would have been stayed around, I mean, he probably would have had a career like Leonardo DiCaprio had.
Yes,
probably.
I was thinking DiCaprio. You
know? Yeah.
Well, that scene when he talks about stealing the milk money and giving it back, and then the teacher, like, just steals the milk money and uses it herself, like, and he breaks down, like, I'm like, fuck this
guy. I was impressed, yeah.
Yeah, River Phoenix, man, it's such a tragedy.
How old do you think he was, like, in this, like 14, probably 13?
14 or 15, I'm guessing.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah, I mean, I assume they're all, like, a little older playing, you know, a little younger, maybe, like, they're supposed to be 12, and
but
maybe they're
much.
14
probably
or something.
Maybe, if anything, maybe just they're, like, just maybe a couple years older than maybe they're, the roles they're playing.
It's usually the case, I feel like, you know. Yeah, and I think, and even Will Wheaton's good, I think, in this,
oh, he's
too.
Great.
Will Wheaton's great, yeah. Yeah, he's really good. And Corey Feldman's good, too, yeah.
And in his story, too, like, much like Feldman, he had a strained relationship with his parents. Like, his parents really pushed him. They I kind of get the sense that his parents were, like, those entertainment parents, you know, like, pushing the, like, we're putting all this on our kids, and you better be successful, you know? And, like, he talks about, like, how his home life was shit, and how, like, his real family, like, he felt like he had a better family with, like, the Next Generation crew and cast. Like, you know what I mean?
This,
like,
was pre-Next Generation, wasn't it? 1986?
This is 1 year before Next Generation started, yeah.
But he didn't come until later, right? Or was he in there pretty early in Next Generation?
He was in there early.
He was in the first season, first episode.
Oh, wow, okay.
He was in the first three
seasons. Yeah, it's like the opposite, Ryan. He leaves a few seasons in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he's great, and, you know, he's bringing that same energy that Feldman's bringing, you know, just like a shitty home life, and, like, to talk to that in this movie, like, this movie goes so hard in that area, like with the dad, Gordy's dad, like, this is that thing, like, we talk about, we this is, like, one of the quotes that we use, like, wrong kid dad.
Wrong kid dad, yeah, I was laughing at that. I mean, that's not the movie's fault.
That line hits so hard where it's just, like, should have been you, Gordon, like, fuck, that just...
That wasn't a dream, right? That was a dream.
Well,
yet.
That was a dream,
he didn't,
but also when he's
actually
just like,
say
why
that,
can't you have friends like Denny had?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
so deadpan. The parents are so creepy in this movie. Like Gordy's parents specifically. Like the way the mom, like, that it was also something I was like, are there any women in this movie? There's the mom, and there's like the woman who comes out of the store yelling
who's
about like
Cherry Bob's off out here.
Is that it? Is that the only women
well,
in the whole
movie? Well,
you're
forgetting in the story the mayor's wife who gets puke on her tits, as they say.
Well, we also got, you know, Annette Funicelli's
tits. Oh, okay, we have a notable woman, the mayor's wife.
A fat lady barfs in her purse.
No, we got Annette's boobs, you know, is in the movie, too, you know, was talked about.
Hey, you guys been watching the Mickey Mouse Club lately?
Yeah.
I think Annette's tits are getting bigger.
Think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he's right. I've been noticing lately that the A and the E are starting to bend around the sides.
Annette's tits are great.
Yeah.
You guys watch Mickey Mouse Club lately? I should have been there.
Oh, I thought if you write that scene, like Ryan's like, yeah, I can see, yeah, your tits are getting bigger.
No, I've been listening to a lot of Annette lately, so I'm just saying, you know.
I thought you were all about Juju.
Juju?
Or
no, Annette Funicelli. She has Annette Goes Italian, you know. Monkey's Uncle's a good song. The Beach Boys sing on that song.
No idea.
How they recommend
about.
Monkey's Uncle.
What's happening?
Annette Funicelli.
Am I having a stroke?
Remember when there's at the junkyard and they're talking about the Mickey Mouse Club?
Yeah, I remember that, but what are you talking about?
So Annette,
that
she went
is
on.
Weird. What
to,
the hell is Annette?
She's like a, you know, she was kind of like the first, like, you know, star from the Mickey Mouse Club, and she has a lot of albums. So it's just kind of funny. And there's one that's like, "I love the Monkey's Uncle, but I wish I was the Monkey's Aunt." Monkey's Aunt, you know that.
So she was on Mickey Mouse Club in the 50s.
Yeah. But then,
and you're like, a fan.
I just, it's become like a like when Brian Wilson died, I was, you know, you hear him dive, and you're like, okay, he sings on this Annette song that's like Monkey's Uncle, and it's a good, like, Beach Boys-y kind of, like, song. I think he might have wrote
picturing, it. I imagine when Brian Wilson died, like, I imagine, like, a scene in a forest, Ryan's in his car, and he's just looking down, he's got the paper in his lap, you know, Beach Boys singer Brian Wilson dies.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, you're doing a dive and you find some new things and stuff, you know? And it's good. Right. It's a song. It's been. I think it's funny. I think it'd be a funny song to cover, in a, like a punk band or something.
Okay. Well, anyway, of
Annette.
Funny,
so I've had Annette on the brain. And she's also
I can tell. I can tell Annette has been on the brain.
Well, speaking of funny, you kind of touched on something. We mentioned it briefly, but one of the big things from this movie, you know, so, you know, big coming of age movie. It has a really serious tone. Like, you get some great acting, some serious moments. There's also a reprieve from all that in the middle, when Gordy tells his story of Lardass and the pie eating contest. So, Mike, you're the newbie here. What was your reaction to this scene, the story that Gordy's telling his friends?
I love the idea of it. Like, I love the idea that we're getting like a, like when, once it, it, you know, he's telling the story, and once it cut to like, we're seeing the story unfold, I was very excited. Cause I really like the idea that like, we're going to see filmed the kids' like story. So we're like, you know, the idea that what we're watching here is entirely a little kid's story is a very fun concept.
And the tone is like surreal too.
It's very, it felt very Stephen King. Like this whole thing felt like Stephen King all over. I don't know how I feel about the actual story. I do love my favorite
story.
My favorite thing about the story is like part of the bit is like this kid is always teased for being fat, and the like he's getting his revenge, right? That's basically the plot. And I loved the degree to which the kid is being teased for being fat. Like, it's not just like other kids, but like adults are like, Lardass. Like that was really funny to me. Like old, like harumph old people in the back were like, oh, well, he is kind of a Lardass. Like that.
Well, they're the ones that go boom, Bob.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The old, the Elks Lodge people, as this kid is walking,
which
they're
is
like,
so
boom, Bob.
Order of antelopes. Like, what the hell is that?
It's the Elks Lodge. It's a kid. It's a little kid Elks Lodge ripoff. Yeah, but no. So I like parts of it. I don't know how I feel about where it ultimately. I do love. So it ends up in a barforama, as they say. I did appreciate and thought it was a funny thing that when people start throwing up, you know, first is the people in the pie eating contest who are throwing up, and of course they're all throwing up blueberry pie.
But when the smell hits the crowd.
Right, and when the crowd starts throwing up, they're also all throwing up blueberry pie. Like, everybody is only throwing up blueberry pie, which is funny.
Mike's the one like, but there's one thing I didn't understand. Why did the crowd throw up blueberry pie?
Wasn't that blueberry like a festival, or what was the festival or something? Was it? Maybe it was like a
pie. It was a pie bake-off and eat-off or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was like the only things anyone had in their system was blueberry pie.
That's pretty funny, you know.
It made it a little less gross, too, because it was like clearly
did he
like
pay to get into the festival, too, you know.
What's the ticket cost for this festival? Yeah. Pay at the door? Or like,
no, I love the.
You
the,
save money if you buy it online first?
The thing is, it's kind of the whole thing Corey Feldman says. He's like, that's how it ends? What the hell?
Well, he goes. Then what happened?
Yeah, I know. But then it's like the him going like, what do you mean? That's the end. That hit me hard. You know,
were you thinking of Damon like, Lindelof or something?
Or
right
just
there?
Like anything. Like just like artists is like, that's the fucking ending. What are you doing? Like, and someone being like, bullshit.
Yeah,
like,
it does. Really... It does feel very like producer, like studio exec giving notes to like a director or something. Like, so that's what happens after that. That's the ending.
No, but that's the end. Well, that's the climax.
Well, to not basically break kayfabe, I went to a Q&A with the director last night, and someone basically did that at the Q&A.
Wait, what did they say?
So I saw this new Kelly Reichardt movie, and there's a Q&A, and it was basically
Kelly
just
Reichardt's
like,
directing out in the way, so you don't need to break kayfabe.
Yeah, she's still directing here, and anyway, she the movie, you know, her movies kind of have like a, I would say they're ambiguous. A lot of them, they're kind of this, they kind of end
they
on
are,
like
yeah.
a down note, or not down note, but just kind of like, oh, that's it, you know. And someone said that, like, oh, a lot of your movies end this way. Like, do you ever think about what's happening at the end or something? But I think the person, they meant in good faith, but I think that it was a younger person kind of worded it in a way like they're abrupt or something, or they don't have endings.
Did the crowd kind of go,
Well, she's, I know what she meant. Like, do you think
how did,
about.
How did she answer it?
Well, she wanted to ask, like, do you think about what happens next kind of thing? And the answer was yes. I said, do you think about what happens next? But the way the person worded it, she was kind of younger, was kind of like, your movies don't have endings. And she was like, they don't have endings. I thought this was pretty ending, you know, kind of thing.
But did she seem like offended or was she
no,
like,
no,
was
it was
she
just like No, it was just kind of funny. Like, and it could have came off that way, but she didn't. You know,
I do like the way that a story ends. Like, I think it's a good thing when a story ends. There's a balance. Like, you want to be satisfied, but. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a mark of a good story if you're, when it ends, you're still wanting to know what happened to these characters. Like, you're still invested. You're still thinking about it. And
That's exactly kind of the answer. But it was just kind of funny that the, it was fine. But it was just the way that she was probably like a nervous, like, young person, like, you know, said it in a funny way that sounded like, your movies don't have an ending.
Well, anyway. I'll tell you what happened.
And then what happened?
She killed her father, and then she joined the Texas Rangers.
I know, right? She's like, went home and shot her dad.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Wow.
Whoa.
But yeah, it's kind of funny because it does feel a little bit like this kind of weird sort of like thrown in thing in the movie. But I don't know. I kind of like it for that. I don't know.
Well, we get these fun moments of just the kids just hanging out, which I appreciate. Again, I was just shocked at how much this movie gets in such a short runtime. Like, you get moments of them just hanging out in the junkyard, talking to, you know, just bullshitting. You get that great campfire scene when the camera's just rotating around and they're all just sort of like he mentions this great thing, like the type of talk that seems important till you hit puberty, basically. She's like, what the hell is Goofy? Like, that line is one that Ryan and I say all the time.
It's true.
We talked into the night. The kind of talk that seemed important until you discover girls.
All right. Mickey's a mouse. Donald's a duck. Pluto's a dog. What's Goofy?
If I can only have one food for the rest of my life, that's easy. Pez. Cherry-flavored Pez. No question about it.
Goofy's a dog. He's definitely a dog.
I knew the $64,000 question was fixed. There's no way anybody can know that much about opera. He can't be a dog. He wears a hat and drives a car. Wagon Train's a really cool show, but did you ever notice that they never get anywhere? They just keep wagon training.
God, that's weird. What the hell is Goofy?
And talks like who would win in a fight, Superman or Mighty Mouse? Like, these are the types of conversations you have at that age.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's like one of the good moments in like Donnie Darko. Was just like, you know, who like the Smurfette talk and stuff like that. Like, do the Smurfs like fuck and stuff? Good stuff.
Well, we mentioned endings. What do you guys think of this ending? And again, this is updated from the book where they find the body. They're gonna take it back. And then Ace and his friends come and they threaten them. And this is the vibe changes. I like this too. I kind of caught this.
What happens in the book? Yeah, I want to know what's the original bending.
It's Chris is the one who has the gun and basically, you know, suck my fat one, get out of here, and they leave. That's kind of the change. But this movie is more focused on Gordy, and Gordy is the one.
Is that the only change?
Well, like I mentioned before, there's like a big storm. It kind of just to set the scene in the book a little bit. There's like a big storm. But I mean, essentially, it's the same. It's just some things are switched. The big one being that Gordy is the one, Will Wheaton, that pulls the gun and kind of his character changes. He has that character change. But one thing I thought was cool watching this is like you see the change in Ace's gang. Like, they're all there. They're like, all right, you little shits. Like, we found this, but you know, this is ours. We're gonna take it in and get rich and famous, whatever. But one of the characters in the group is Chris's brother. He's called Eyeball Chambers. And there's an interaction that Gordy and Chris have with Ace and Eyeball earlier in the movie when they're going off their adventure. Like, they run into Ace and Eyeball. He steals Gordy's Yankees cap, which he never gets back, by the way. His brother, who died, and we haven't touched on that yet, who played by John Cusack, his brother died, gave him his hat, it was a big deal, and fucking Kiefer Sutherland steals it, throws Chris to the ground, and, like, threatens to, like, burn him with a cigarette. And during this scene, Chris's brother Eyeball is just standing there laughing. And I caught this on this watch. Later in the movie, in the climax, when Kiefer pulls a knife on them, is about to kill him, in that moment, like, the tone changes. Suddenly, Eyeball's like, whoa, dude, just chill out, dude. Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? I like
that. Yeah, I mean, they're all kind of like, dude, are you going to, like, kill a kid? Like, don't.
Exactly, yeah.
And they're all each other's like older brothers and stuff too, a little bit. Like,
yes, well, Vern's brother is the one who with the other guy found the body in the first place. So it really emphasizes how small this town is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
yeah, and like everybody, like the shop when he goes and buys four Cokes and some hamburger, you know, knows who they are and stuff, and the junkyard knows who they are.
The junkyard guy, I know your names, but Mike, as a first time watcher, like, how did this ending hit with you with Gordy pulling the gun on him?
It was good. I mean, I didn't really it felt like a natural conclusion to me. I liked it. I mean, it's not really any, I didn't see it as a big like whoa. Like I was,
suck,
you know,
my fat one?
I'm kind of I was kind of waiting for the gun to come out, you know, cuz they set it up so hard. So I was expecting something to happen. So, yeah, no, I think it was fine. I don't think the ending was like anything crazy one way or the other.
Well, I kind of like, it's a little hard to say since I've seen this so many times, but I think the real part in the last part of this movie that got me was when Dreyfuss comes back in again, his voiceover, and it's Chris and Gordy saying goodbye. And you know, they've been through this thing, they're all going their separate ways, and then Chris leaves, like, you know, I'll see you, not if I see you first. He walks off, and when it drops the line again where
he looks heavenly, like, you know, in that moment, I thought he's in, like, it's like there's a very angel type of light.
Well, he disappears, yeah, like as he walks off, Chris. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, he, that line where he's just like, you know, he tried to make the best peace, he was stabbed in the throat, he died instantly, and he disappears, like,
yeah,
that line got to me, and like, yeah.
Yeah, and that, and you know what honestly, like, kind of stood out to me the most is the bit about, like, the casual way they're like, and we never hung out with Ted and Verda again. Like,
yeah.
Like, the way that was kind of the thing I think that stuck with me the most. Because it feels so true to life, and, like,
yeah,
you know, I don't, the stand, being stabbed and, like, dying and stuff is more dramatic, and I don't know, it's not quite as relatable as just like I'm just like, well, losing just touch with someone who is a good friend, you know.
Well, especially like when after, right after they've gone on this odyssey, as we said, and then to find out, like, yeah, and then the next year in junior high we just kind of drifted apart.
Yeah,
like, that just like hits so hard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was pretty affecting, I would say. Like, I didn't cry, but I could see someone crying, of course, you know.
Another thing that watching this, we didn't talk about the train sequence, which is a big part of this, a big kind of like memorable thing about this movie. Like, I was kind of just, because this was not a big budget movie. I think the budget was somewhere between $5 and $7 million. Like, not a big budget movie, not really any stars in the movie. Because, I mean, John Cusack at this time, this is right when he was starting to pop in this movie. This is 86, so he was just kind of on the cusp. And Corey Feldman had been in the Goonies the year before, so really you could argue Corey Feldman's the biggest star in the movie.
He was on Gremlins, like, before that too.
Gremlins was a couple years before this. Like, you could argue Feldman was the biggest star.
And Corey Feldman, did he kind of like never, he was like a child star, but he wasn't really in stuff as an adult, was he?
I mean, he's been
just
in stuff,
like,
nothing,
B-movies and stuff. Yeah, he kind of fell off, you know.
But his main fame was just isolated to child 80s. Star, right?
Definitely in the 80s. Definitely the 80s, yeah.
I mean, he kind of became more of like a personality than it was.
Yeah,
And that's due to probably fucked up, you know. He was hanging out with, like, Michael Jackson and stuff.
Yeah, right. That was probably Michael Jackson's fault.
Yeah, probably.
But to speak to that train sequence, like, watching it this time, I was surprised by how effective it is and how good it looked. Like, aside from maybe a one or two shots where it's clearly like rear projection or something like that, like, I think that, like, the perspective, like the forced perspective that they do with the kids running in front of the train, and those wide angle shots of like them running on the bridge with the train behind them, like, super effective for such a small budget movie, and for a director who had only made, I think, like two or three movies before this.
It is that those two, there's like two rear projection shots. I think they look pretty good still.
They look good. Yeah. I mean, you can tell they're rear projection, but they're fairly well integrated, I think.
Yeah. I thought they looked really good. I wasn't really like, I was assuming there was something going on because that seemed so dangerous, but I couldn't see the seams or anything like that. I think it's perfect.
Well, yeah. Especially that wide shot, that profile shot of them running on the bridge with the train going behind them. And they say it's like a 100-foot drop down to the water. Like, it's effective,
it's,
man.
It's kind of funny because that train it only has coal. It's not pulling anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
oh, really?
they definitely like just like brought that train in for that, you know.
I saw like that train is it's the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad, which is a heritage railroad thing. It's basically a thing you can get in and ride for like for fun. Like,
yeah, like
it's just there. And... like if you want to like ride, which actually sounds delightful and I'm kind of interested.
Oh, sure.
But you just like ride on a train and it's like, you know, choo choo.
Now the movie this scene does hits me even like scarier because there was it was like 10 years ago, there was that accident on the set where I forget what movie it was like William Hurt movie where the assistant cameraman woman died on a train accident on a bridge like this they were shooting on a bridge and didn't have like weren't supposed to or something like that. And yeah, Sarah Jones was her name. And she like got hit by the train basically. Like, and it reminds me so much of this movie because it was like on a bridge train. You know, she died getting hit by it's crazy. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It was 2014. I just pulled it up. So,
wow.
Yeah. That movie never came out. Midnight Rider was called.
Oh, they didn't release it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow.
Looks like it at least. I don't know. But anyway, it's pretty cool. I'm trying to think. There's also Corey Feldman's like it's funny because I never, maybe it's just watching on TV and like SD. You don't notice like fucking his fucked up ear. You know, as much.
Oh,
like.
Yeah. It's pretty gnarly. Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly look. Especially in the... I feel like they maybe, like, there's that first scene in the treehouse. It's, like, looks kind of weird. And then I feel like they kind of... Maybe they don't shoot it as close up. So it doesn't really... You don't catch it as much.
I forget about it, honestly, until they, like, mention it from time to time.
Yeah, I'm trying other things. Yeah, what... it's funny that he bought hamburger meat for some reason. I don't know why. Like,
he bought
hot dogs?
Yeah, he bought, like, hamburger meat, Cokes, based on what else they're... eating marshmallows.
Well, they only had, well, they're able to scrounge together 237, which in 1959, which I think is when this movie takes place, like that would have got them probably a good amount of stuff at like the local grocer or something.
Four Cokes. Yeah. And is John Cusack, is he even credited? Because I think he's popping off at this point. Because he would have been in like 16 Candles.
I was surprised to see John Cusack in this, especially for such a small role. Like, I was like, wow, okay.
He's credited in there as a brother. He does like, he's framed in such a way, and it makes sense because in Gordy's mind, and presumably in the mind of everyone in this small town, he is like a godly character. He's like this star football player. Everyone talks about how great he was. And like the first shot we see of him is literally like angelic lighting, I feel. You know what I mean? Like in his room, he's like, no, this is your Yankee cap. He reminds me a little bit. Remember when we watched We Bought a Zoo and like Matt Damon like takes on like this angelic, like he's like when I think Scarlett Johansson asks him, he's like, why'd you buy a zoo or something like that? And he goes, why not? And it's like he walks into the like into the horizon or something. Like I get the same sense of otherworldly.
Not if I see
Don
you
Cusack
first.
In this.
Or I was thinking that the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Gordy, I read your story. I thought it was great, man. It was really good. He just like it almost I think like it frames him in such a way. It made me wonder, like, was he this ideal?
Yeah,
like,
it's
or
sort
it,
of
or
like,
is it kind of like Gordy, you know, romanticizing his brother, the memory.
Yeah, it could be both that. I mean, it's kind of like that's what he's doing. That's even what, like, you know, Dreyfuss is doing, you know, romanticizing at the end of the whole. Do you like, so like, does the framing device, does that
I love it.
Yeah, you love it. Okay. Cool.
I'm curious
if you need it.
Dreyfuss is killing it, and just like this, I love how much of it is just wordless. It's just him reacting, him looking at his old ass word processor, and he's typing in. I like the pauses in between the
he's a really writing. Slow typer. I know. I like that.
Well, he's typing with purpose. I never had any friends like the ones I had when I was 12.
Yeah, the yeah, and then
can we just say Dreyfuss as a narrator?
You like it, yeah?
Oh, love it!
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, love good.
I don't know if I was not like this enthralled by it, but I thought it was good. But I wouldn't. It's not enough to be like killing it. Like,
well, I mean, part of it, I'm probably sure is just the script. You know, the writing.
Yeah,
I feel like maybe they overdo it with the needle drops, but I think they don't overdo it with Dreyfuss his voiceover coming in. They have just the right amount of narration, him coming in,
why
setting up some context of things.
So we talked about like the American Graffiti like kind of like ending where it's like this person went on to blah blah blah. Yeah. You know. And if I remember right, not positive on those. What made this work more than the American Graffiti ending?
Maybe because it's like less people. It's only like the few guys, you know.
Well, and also with American Graffiti, you literally don't you see like their like yearbook photo as well?
Yeah, like, it does like cheesiness to it. And I think too, it's like the American. When I was thinking about the American Graffiti endings, are very like stereotypical, like. This is what happened like in the 60s and 70s kind of thing. Like they went on to be beatniks or they went
true,
on to die
like,
in Vietnam.
The thing is that like, you guys got to remember there's not like people doing this before that movie. You know what I mean? Like that's the movie that does it. And then it gets ripped off like a, you know, later kind of thing. Mm. You know, I think it's like same thing with this, with the needle drops. Like there's like, there are the typical 50s needle drops, but like there wasn't someone doing this before, you know, it's kind of like, it's like you gotta put in the context of that, and also it's a pop movie. You know,
they were needle dropping in American Graffiti plenty.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like that was like the first time. You know,
that worked. Well, the American Graffiti needle drop. See, lest I be known as a fuddy duddy for excessive needle drops. American Graffiti has needle drops galore, but it worked in that movie, and I still think it might have been less than this one.
Oh, that one movie ends with like radio DJ, like
dude.
You know,
yeah, I guess that would like the radio is even more of like a thing than it is
American.
In this one.
Well, because it was that time. Where were you in 62, Mike? Not listening to the radio, apparently. But they literally released it. I have this vinyl album. There is a two LP album that American Graffiti put out that has an ass load of music on it. We're talking like 30 tracks.
Wow,
craziness.
I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes it's more of a modern thing that needle drops bug me at least. But for some of these movies, it doesn't really bug me as much, you know. But I'm trying to think of like there's movies like, to me, they're not really even referencing much. They're not even referencing anything 50s other than the music. It's kind of the only thing going
on. Well, one thing this isn't necessarily just for the 50s, but one thing that kind of stuck with me watching it this time, fucking America and football, they are intertwined. Like, if you're not playing football, what do? You know what I mean? Like, that scene with the grocery store owner or whatever is like, oh, your brother could sure play. What do?
Yeah.
You don't play football? Then what
do you do?
Yeah,
and the dinner scene
that's the best.
The dinner scene with John Cusack when he's, like, still alive and the dad's like... The mom's like making small talk, and the dad's like, "Shut up! He's got the game coming up. He's got to think about football.
Requires about girls.
Concentration."
It really makes me hate football. Fuck football! Like the idea that like everyone is so it was such a thing and still is. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's so obsessed with football, like to an unhealthy degree. You know what I mean?
If it wasn't football, it'd be something else. You know?
The thing is, these people in this town have nothing. You know,
that's
all they got.
They have nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot to do. Like, this movie's all about, you know, generational trauma, really, I think. And then, you know, these guys are all, dads that were in World War II and just they're all fucked up, too.
But it just got me thinking, how many stories, how many movies are there that revolve, like Friday Night Lights? How many, like, towns are just, it's all football. You know what I mean? And how many lives has football ruined?
I mean, not even talking about the actual players whose lives football has ruined.
it's interesting to me how tied in football
is with Americana. I'm not sitting around there saying, like, you know, protesting the football games or anything like that, but I do think at some point in the future, whether it's 50 years or 100 years or whatever, or 10 years, I think there will be a time where people look back at football, like American style football, and be like, I can't believe people played that like that. I don't think, just because of how damaging it is to your body, you know, and like CT and everything, like I feel like there will be a point, unlike, you know, soccer, baseball, or basketball, where like that game might stop being a thing. And we look back on it as an insane thing that people did.
I think we may be at a point where it may be the only sport left, I think. I think we're going the other direction.
Well, hey, Brian, rollerball is getting very popular these days.
I was thinking about maybe
it stays alive by peeling back the, you know, maybe it's like, hey, next season for football, no helmets.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm thinking about joining like a small like Division IV like co-ed rollerball team in Bartertown, but we'll see, you know.
Yeah.
So Mike, I want to ask, like, so did you ever think that, I'm guessing you probably played Pokemon before, and then you were in your room in Pallet Town, and you watched the TV, and the TV says, "This it says there's a movie on TV. Four boys are walking on railroad tracks. I better go too." Like, did you know what that was referencing?
No, did you ever think? That doesn't ring a bell at all.
That is in the English and the Japanese versions of the first Pokemon games. Is that you watch the TV and it says there's four boys walking on some train railroad tracks. I better go too.
And oh, that was a Stand By Me reference.
It is, yeah. In Pokemon, you know, Red, Blue, and Green, Yellow, all those originals, and then
wow,
and then in the remakes, when you could be a woman, they switched it to Wizard of Oz. If you pick the woman, basically.
Interesting. That's cool. No, but I mean, I probably was like, oh, they're going on an adventure. So am I. Wow.
Yeah.
and never thought of it. Yeah, that's neat. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly a. I see why this would be a cultural touchstone movie, 100%.
I'm seeing too, like, this is like scanning, like, you know, Chadopedia, like, and I was talking about, like, them talking about pop culture, like, Annette's, you know, things and Goofy and such. And it's very much like, and I was referencing Donnie Darko, but I'm like, oh, this is totally Quentin Tarantino vibes, too. Like, he was kind of took this kind of.
Sure.
This is, like, the first
like, who would win in a fight, Mighty Mouse or Superman?
Yeah.
Mighty Mouse is a cartoon, you moron.
Because Quentin kind of gets all the credit for that, for like the, you know, the Like a Virgin speech.
It's like a Kevin Smith thing, too.
Yeah, like those two kind of get the glory of the pop culture and movie kind of thing.
Clerks before Reservoir Dogs? I feel like it was.
It was after? After.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind then.
But really, this might be it. I don't know. Also, we might have to gather like the... together the woman players of the apocalypse video to do Now and Then. Did you ever watch Now and Then?
I was just, dude, you read my mind.
I don't know. That movie, what is Now and Then?
It's basically this movie, the girl version of this movie.
Yeah. And what's funny, there is also a scene with, like, if I remember correctly, of like boys in like water or something, like in a water hole.
What are they doing in Now and Then? Like, what's the thing? Like, are they looking, they also looking for a dead body, or is
literally
it
this movie? Almost.
Oh, I don't remember what they're doing. I don't remember what they're doing, but it's basically like four women that were old friends get together, and it's Melanie Griffith, Demi Moore, Rosie O'Donnell, and Rita Wilson.
Wow.
Wasn't there like a haunted house?
I don't know. I don't remember. But then they flash back to them as kids.
It's quite the cast.
It's Christina Ricci, Thora Birch, Gabby Hoffman, and I don't know who Ashley Aston Moore is. But like Gabby Hoffman, Thora Birch, Christina Ricci, that's like the trio of like kid women actors of the early 90s, you know? So
yeah.
This is like 10 years or so after.
Yeah, 95. I don't remember what the plot is really, but I just remember that they.
Well, I do remember in Now and Then, at least a couple of those characters reunite later, like as their older.
Yeah,
selves.
That's kind of that's the framing device of that one.
Yeah, but I remember liking that movie too.
Yeah, no, there's a waterhole scene. I remember was a big.
Devin Sawa is in it.
Oh wow!
If I recall, I think that was him. Anyway,
Devin Sawa. I mean, he's in Casper. Is he also in this too?
I think he is.
Wow.
Well, in any event.
Yeah, he is. You're right. Damn.
He is? Okay, yeah. And I think, if I recall, I think Ricci has like a crush on him or something. Maybe I'm.
Also, they carry that over to Casper, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But I should say, like, if anyone was curious what Stephen King's thoughts on this adaptation were, he's been on record as saying this is actually his favorite adaptation of his work. He thought it was great. He had said, like, during the screening when he watched it that he was like, I think someone like asked him, like, what did you feel about the changes? He's like, I thought it made it better. He's like, they made a better version of my story than I did. Basically.
I remember him telling that he like walked out of the theater
he walked out of the Gordy screening and they asked him why. He's like, the gun out. He was so moved.
And he was just like,
it's great, but it's,
and it shocked him.
Still mystifying to me that he doesn't understand how good The Shining is, but I know that's a Stephen King thing that he hates The Shining.
Well, because they in that one, they changed a lot from his book. And in his mind, he was like Kubrick kind of, you know.
He made his own thing, yeah.
Made his own thing, yeah.
He made it way better.
And also, I'm sure there's some he's probably resentful that like the movie is like probably much more popular than his version.
Because it's way better, but, you know.
He left the screening of Stand By Me and like, you were about to say.
Yeah, people just thought, like, he's like, oh, man, he's probably, like, pissed or something. But he was just like, it was a shock to him where he was just like, wow, what a cool thing. And it is. I think when I first, like, had that kind of happen to me, I was like, whoa. Because it is really him taking charge of the, unfortunately, it's a gun. But it's just like, yeah, it's really Gordy becoming, you know, getting the confidence. You know,
and he basically said King was just like, did he walk out after this moment?
I don't know. I just remember hearing that, or maybe that was that they meet that may even be someone like talking up like that. He
like
was
a tall
just,
tale,
yeah, a tall tale or something.
But basically, he was just like,
he just said, left to take a leak. He was like, oh, sorry.
Well, basically, King said like it was a better version. King basically thought like, oh shit, this is what I should have done in the book. Like it should have been Gordy that did it.
Yeah. But it's really has to do with, like, you know, if we are focusing the story on Gordy, he does need to have, like, this arc kind of thing that happens. Because he is sort of, like, along for the ride a little bit.
And I should say, like King also said, like, this, you really captured, like, what I was going for. This movie feels autobiographical. We should say this happened to King. Like, him and his friend discovered a dead body.
Oh, really? I was going to say, like, Gordy feels like a
Stephen King coded.
It feels like the most Stephen King insert character ever, for sure.
Well, there's so many of Stephen King's stories involve writers. Like, the writer is, like, the main character.
Right,
know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's just putting himself in. I mean, to be clear, I like Stephen King. He's great.
Big figure in my childhood. I love Stephen King movies, Stephen King books. Like, he was and probably is my favorite author. He just has a very, if you've ever read a Stephen King book, like, his books are very easy to read, like, the style.
Very page-turnery.
Very patient-y, and also like one thing, and that's like one of the things.
Good
I like
range too. He's got kind of like. It's all kind of in this spooky adjacent stuff, but
he's good about. He's good with characters, and he's good with like weird tall tale aspects of like of towns. You know, what
he's
I mean?
Written like, he really so much too. Things. Like, there's just like so much out there. Like, if you don't like something, just read something else. Like, there's
arguably like one of the most prolific writers ever, and in terms of how much he's put out. He's such a fast writer.
Yeah, he's still on the waist writing.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Speaking of King, like, how does this rank for you? So now that you've seen this, Mike, like, where does this fall in terms of, like, Stephen King adaptations?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I'm feeling like I might have a bit of a Stephen King pile of shame pile, because just off the top of my head, movies I have not seen that are Stephen King stories. I have not seen Misery. I have not seen Christine.
That's John Carpenter.
Yeah, I know. I have seen Carrie. I have seen The Shining. I have not seen The Shawshank Redemption. That was him, right?
Dude, it was from the same book that Stand By Me came from.
Was The Green Mile him?
Yeah, that was him.
I haven't seen that.
You got a big blind spot, man.
Yeah. I've seen, he did The Mist. Was The Mist one of his stories?
That was his, yeah, based on a short story.
I like that one also a lot. Really that movie's underrated. The Mist is cool. Yeah, I don't know. This would be towards the top, I'd say. I mean, I think I liked it about as much as Carrie, I'd say. I'd kind of put it on par with around where Carrie is at. Like, Shining is way at the top. Shining is one of my favorite movies. But this would probably be around, like, Carrie, you know, above The Mist.
About Dr. Sleep?
I like Dr. Sleep.
What's Dr. Sleep? Is Dr. Sleep the sequel to The Shining?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Was that even written by Stephen King? I thought that was written by someone else.
No, that was Stephen King. And also, I will say the movie does an amazing thing of blending the movie version of Shining and the book version of Shining. Because the movie and the book are obviously very different in key areas. But
Dr. Sleep specifically?
Yeah, the movie Dr. Sleep does a great job.
Maybe I should just like read. I think I read The Shining when I was like in high school. So maybe I should just like read The Shining and Dr. Sleep. Soon, and then watch the Stephen King version of The Shining that was on the Sci-Fi Channel, and then watch Dr. Sleep.
Well, I will say, Stephen King wrote the teleplay for the TV movie version,
right.
And the TV movie version is the book. It is straight out the book. I will say that I think the thing that King was kind of disappointed in was because he wrote that book. It's about his alcoholism, basically, him being an alcoholic.
And that's 100% what the Kubrick one is about. That's the horror of the alcoholic dad.
But I think the difference between the two, aside from some story beats being different, like I feel like in the book, it's a lot more character focused. Like the movie is a lot more surreal, and Jack Torrance, like, he doesn't have like a character change in the end. He's crazy the whole way.
He's kind of like, as they're driving up, he's like, yeah, he saw it on TV.
He's already crazy as he goes up, basically, which is kind of, I think the character differences are kind of the biggest things between the differences.
I don't think he's like full on crazy when they're driving up. I think he
absolutely is, Mike.
I don't think he's full on crazy. I think he's like a shitty, abusive alcoholic dad who turns into like, yeah, a full-on, I don't think he was gonna like chase his kids with an axe around a hedge maze in the beginning of the movie, but I think you see his descent, but you see the seeds of like him
in
there.
In the book, he's a much more like, you could see that like this is he's more of a normal guy. I'm sorry, Jack Nicholson is not, never has been a normal
yeah
guy.
But I think that's dumb because it's not about like I think it was inside him all along, you know, Dave.
I think
that's
he's
the point.
A more well-rounded character.
It's not like The Shining is like this hotel is to do this. You have to have a crazy hotel turning this guy into a monster. Like, he already was a monster. He just didn't know it yet, you know.
Well, and I think that's why I like the book and the movie. They're doing two very different things. They're telling the same story very differently.
It's been so long. I should reread the book. I shouldn't be criticizing it this hard, so I barely remember it. But
I just want to go on record saying Shining, one of the greatest horror movies ever made, period.
Which, the Sci-Fi Channel original movie, Dave?
The sci-fi one.
I said the movie, not the TV movie.
Oh, I guess I've seen it, the TV it. I haven't seen the remake of, or the Skarsgård it, but I saw the TV one. That would be low for me. So but where this ranks among Kubrick or among Kubrick movies.
We know where Mike's allegiance is.
No, among Stephen King movies, I'd say towards the top. This is
what about you, Ryan?
Some good stuff.
No, I'm with you. I'm looking at what I've seen, and there's the ones I haven't seen is like kind of like the more schlocky stuff, like the Salem's Lot, and I never seen like Pet Sematary.
Salem's Lot was a TV movie too, I think,
by Tobe Hooper.
Oh wow, yeah. Like, actually, Misery is probably the biggest one I haven't seen.
Oh really? Oh,
but
wow.
I've seen like, I've seen like Christine is really fun and stuff, and like, but I think I think they're probably a point. I mean, other than Shining, this is probably number two for me. Steph probably up there. I mean, it always was my reference.
Above Carrie?
Yeah, but I'd like to see, I need to see Carrie again, you know, but yeah, I think so. I'm looking at all my things. Like, I didn't love The Mist when I first saw it. Now I like it, kind of thing. Mm. But
Do you like it more than Shawshank and Green Mile?
Green Mile is one I haven't revisited, but Shawshank was a late watch for me, actually. I remember I saw that with Dave, actually, I think at a re-release, like,
yeah, in theaters,
yeah, and it was really, and it was amazing, yeah, it was awesome. So
I would probably put Shawshank above this, but like, that's the thing when you're talking about Stephen King adaptations or just his books in general, the fact that he's made so many and that so many were bestsellers and huge touch points in pop culture, it's hard to say, like, it's almost like you can't really, I almost put them in groupings, less like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, more like tiers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when you're talking
this
about
would, if we're doing tiers, I would put this not in the S tier, S for Shining. I would put this in the A tier for awesome.
Oh, really? I would put this in S tier for his adaptations. This is among the best, in my opinion.
I didn't realize.
If it had less needle drops, maybe it would get in the S tier for me.
Uh-huh. Anyway. Well, any closing thoughts on Stephen?
Anyway.
Hatred of the needle drops.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, I never put together the Castle Rock Entertainment. Was because.
Oh yeah.
Was
Does it begin
this.
Here?
After this.
After so. This. Okay.
Yeah.
Named after Stephen King's.
It was named
Castle
after this.
Rock.
Really, it was after, you know, the success of this and all the rest of Rob.
Yeah, but Castle Rock isn't that named after the fictional setting from Stephen King?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 That was kind of like the nexus point in Stephen King.
It is funny that this is like set, and it's making me just think like this. I always think of Stephen King stuff in Maine, and it was funny to see, like, wow, he's really stepping outside of his comfort zone. This isn't set in Maine. This is set in the closest possible thing you could get to Maine, with the Pacific Northwest. Like, it's basically Maine on the other side of the coast. It was funny to be like, oh, let's not do this in one in Maine. Let's do this in basically the same thing as Maine, but on the other side.
There's a Castle Rock in Washington, like a real Castle Rock. But this is just like, yeah, I think just moves us around wherever he needs it to be.
There's probably like 100 Castle Rocks out there in the world.
My last thing, I guess this like rewatching it, I could, I probably would go lower. Like now rewatching it. Lower than I probably had this movie originally, you know, in my head, as far as like,
wow.
And it's mostly has to do with like, I think, you know, it is quick and I think it is a great, like little pace and stuff, but it does feel like a movie to me where it could be longer. I think it could like, where like I could spend more time getting to know more people in the town. Like the greasers feel a little bit, separated a little
if
bit.
If I were to criticize besides the needle drop, my other thing is the cutting to the greaser. Sometimes it felt like a little extraneous, and there's a little bit of that, like maybe it's not developed enough where I'm like, kind of like, what is
that's my, I mean, I it is, it, the thing is, it is nice how it is. Like it is like this nice, like quick movie. It doesn't need much more, but like now watching it, I'm like, you know, I could be in here a little longer,
like 15 like more minutes, you know?
Well, this sounds like what you guys were saying, like a good movie leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
And I think it's just like a tiny bit longer with everyone else. Like, I feel like we don't get, I mean, with Vern, you don't really get much of his home life. At least he has the brother and stuff. But like, I could use a little bit more with each guy. And it's a good thing, you know, more than it is a bad. But so
that sounds like you should read the book. They get into that in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see. But as a kid, this movie like really opens you up, I feel. Like it's a great kid. I think it is a kid's movie, even if it is R, you know? In a way, like it should be a movie a kid should watch and really get a lot out of it.
And I would also recommend the book. Again, it's a novella, so it's only like 90 pages or something like that.
No, I like
this
that.
Book called Different Seasons. It was with this. Shawshank is also in this book called Different Seasons. It's one of the four stories. I forget what the other two are, or I can't remember what was it. Anyway, but those are kind of the two big novellas from that book, Different Seasons. I definitely recommend checking out. It's obviously a really short read. But for now, I feel embarrassed to say this, but as we were doing the recording here, I lost the comb.
Oh, no.
I need you guys to come help me find the comb. I think it fell between the floorboards here. So these guys are going to help me find the comb. In the meantime, though... yeah, let's turn on the radio here. We'll put the radio on, and that's where we'll leave you guys with the needle drop.
I have something we could put on the radio, actually, if that works, you know.
Play it, Ryan.
Just so we can get, just come go out in a little bit, you know. Just so you can see what I'm talking about. Can you hear it?
And the monkey's uncle's ate for me.
Can you hear it at all?
Yeah, yeah. I can hear it. Is this Annette?
Yeah, it is. And there's the Beach Boys back there.
Yeah, I recognize
really
the
right
Beach Boys.
Annette's tits are really starting to come in.
Look, I got
wow.
I love. It's the best. I've never heard this movie. Should we watch Monkey's Uncle next?
No. No, we shouldn't. She loves the monkey's uncle. Feels like the circus just came to town. She loves the monkey's uncle. I'd live in a jungle gym in order to be with him. I love the monkey's uncle and I wish I were the monkey's aunt. Monkey's aunt.
Oh, man, that was the best, just the best.
Yeah.
That would happen.
What do you mean?
I mean, what happened?
What do you mean, what happened? That's the end.
How can that be the end? What kind of an ending is that? What happened to Lardass?
I don't know. Maybe he went home and celebrated with a couple of cheeseburgers.
Jeez, that ending sucks.